Three animated panels converge to form a panoramic view of the statue of Eros on Piccadilly Circus, the ident of Piccadilly Pictures. An animated stone bobs across the surface of water, creating rings in its wake, and settling at the end of the word, embankment. White letters on black spell high and low. They shimmer and an orange-purple glow fills the screen. The letters revert to black and white. A column of cigarette smoke and a black and white newsreel.
And while there is a rattle of gunfire in the Holy Land, there is cheering in Washington and Hebrew dances of joy for a Jewish homeland that has been reborn.
The date 1948 flickers on a screen. Israelis dance for joy. The headline, State of Israel is born, above a newly drawn map of the Middle East.
A Ghana troop search for Arabs after capturing the city.
More archive material. Israel invaded on two fronts. A plume of thick black smoke. Arab states accept ceasefire unconditionally. Soldiers with their hands up. In a dark projection room, another screen flashes up the date 1967, with flickering images of birds in flight.
More than 4,000 Palestinians have been forced to flee their homes. Their journey as refugees has just started.
Total Israel victory. Moshe Dayan, Israel's military genius. Israel claims Sinai Desert and Golan Heights, and the map is redrawn.
Diplomatic negotiations on the Mideast continued today in Washington as Israel's Prime Minister, Golda Meir, met with President Nixon at the White House for 80 minutes.
It's a very great privilege for me speaking in behalf of the American people.
1969 advances to 1973.
I have no prior knowledge of the Watergate break.
4 years after Golda Meir's election as a caretaker prime minister and still overconfident from their victory in the Six-Day War, Israel enters the fall of 1973 unprepared to face the consequences of their hubris. In black and white, a cigarette is lit from a lighter, emitting a cloud of tobacco smoke. The smoker exhales slowly, her lips pursed. She's sitting in the back seat of a car. Two young men are in the front, one of them driving. The elderly woman's dark eyes stare penetratingly from beneath heavy brown eyebrows, her forehead etched with deep lines, a large bulbous nose protruding from her weathered, sunken face. The title Golda appears across the face, and slowly, black and white turns to color. The driver glances in his rearview mirror at Golda Meir's brooding face, her cigarette clamped between her second and third fingers. The front passenger door opens, and Golda stubs out her cigarette in the full car ashtray. She steps out of the car in her black lace-up orthopedic shoes, a dark grey jacket and skirt over a black T-shirt with a crisscross emblem, her greying, wiry hair pulled back from her stern face in a low bun at the back. She looks towards the waiting crowd, shuts her eyes for a second, swallows hard, and starts to move towards the door of the Supreme Court building, with a banner waving protesters on both sides of her. From her point of view, the protesters shaking their fists at her, baying for her blood, are out of focus as she comes past them, her eyes downcast. Her tall protection officer, Adam Sneer, sticking close to her, watching like a hawk. A uniformed guard opens the door for her. She enters the building, and with stooped shoulders walks down a long, dark corridor, her handbag dangling from her fingers, with Adam at a discreet distance behind her. She is shown into the wood-paneled chamber of the Agranat National Commission of Inquiry, Jerusalem, 1974.
Good morning, Madam Prime Minister.
Good morning.
An usher escorts her to a table placed in the center of the room. She puts down her bag and takes a sip of water.
Please swear.
She reads from a card with her hand on a Hebrew Bible.
I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, knowing that I will be subject to punishment provided by law if I do not.
She drops the card on the table and sits down facing a panel of five silver-haired men. And she takes out a cigarette.
Madam Prime Minister, let us begin with October the 5th, 1973.
Hunched over the table, clouds of tobacco smoke wafting round her head, she levels her gaze at the panel as she thinks back to a church at East Finchley School, London, October 1973, and a little girl at a piano with her music teacher sitting nearby.
Yes. Use the fingering I showed you.
The teacher hurries up the aisle of the empty school chapel and goes into her office.
East Finchley School, Mrs. Epstein speaking.
This is the chemist.
She reaches for a pencil.
This is the postmistress. Go ahead.
Zinc, cadmium, chlorine, hydrogen.
She writes down the words at Mossad HQ in Tel Aviv.
Hello.
This is the postmistress.
This is the baker. Go ahead.
Zinc, cadmium, chlorine, hydrogen.
The man decodes the words, war starting. Golda Meir disembarks from her plane at Lod Airport with her PA.
Put out a statement expressing my disappointment at the Austrian capitulation to the terrorists.
Disappointment or maybe frustration?
Yes, frustration, that's better.
They step onto the tarmac.
Speaker.
Prime Minister.
To what do I owe the pleasure?
I heard from my spy, the chemist. He wants to meet tonight. His warning of war.
As he did in May.
The warning was accurate.
He cried wolf. That's how it was perceived. Why do you trust this man?
He knows everything. And he says war is coming.
Yeah, well, of course war is coming, but when? Without Diane's support, there can be no mobilization. And he is unconvinced that the threat is imminent. If he resigns, the government falls. It's that simple, and then the Arabs will most certainly attack.
What does your gut tell you?
My gut is none of your business. But... You're right, there is something. Ask the chemist for a date, a document, something concrete I can work with. I'll stay in Tel Aviv with my son over Kippur. After your meeting, call me on the secure line.
Zvi Zamir, the head of Mossad, holds the car door open for her as she climbs in.
For those who fast, the weather will be pleasant. We wish all the people in Israel an easy fast and Gomar Chatima Tova. Our broadcasts will resume when the fast ends.
Her brown-haired PA Lukadar gauges Golda's reaction. They come into a medical facility.
No one saw you enter, Madame Prime Minister. Mm-hmm. It's all clear.
Golda slips off her headscarf, and she, Lou, and Adam walk down a seemingly endless corridor at Hadassah Hospital, Jerusalem. Lou putting a supportive hand on her Prime Minister's back. They're shown into an almost empty morgue, eerily lit by a number of white square panels in the ceiling. Golda removes her cream-coloured orthopaedic shoes, her ankles badly swollen.
Madam Prime Minister.
Dr. Rosenfeld.
I can't see any new growth. The cobalt radiation appears to be working. But the cigarettes and the black coffee... You're making my job much harder.
And you mine.
Could you manage another treatment?
Do I have a choice?
Not really. This lymphoma is aggressive. Make sure she eats and takes her medication.
Lying on a medical couch in a hospital gown, Golda is smoking another cigarette. Lou gives her arm a squeeze.
I want you to promise me one thing. If you detect the slightest sign of dementia, you will tell me. I can't trust the flatterers.
Lou smiles reassuringly.
I promise. Now, Madame Prime Minister, can I have this?
Taking another puff, Golda hands Lou the cigarette. The medical staff watch through a window as gamma rays are directed at Golda's chest from a prism-like beam accelerator. In the darkness, the glass diamond-shaped prism sends red beams of radiation down onto the patient's body. In her bedroom at night, Golda wakes with a start. She turns on her bedside lamp and picks up the receiver of her red secure telephone.
Yes?
They spoke to my friend.
And?
Egyptian Airlines have moved all their aircraft to Tripoli. The party will begin today, towards sundown.
Do you believe him?
Yes.
Thank you.
She lights another long, white-tipped cigarette. In the back of a minivan, with rain lashing down on the windows, she's huddled in a loose brown coat, flicking ash into a small metal box. Adam, her silent shadow, sits nearby with his eyes peeled. Her face is tense and apprehensive as she ponders. A stenographer steps into the cabinet room in Tel Aviv as Golda arrives on day one. She's followed by Defense Minister Moshe Dayan, who wears a black eye patch, Eli Zera, head of military intelligence, Benny Peled, commander of the Air Force, and David Dabo Elazar, chief of staff. In her private office, the men all sit down. As the men eye each other doubtfully, the stenographer waits for the next person to speak.
Marwan says the attack will begin around sundown. Soviet diplomats and their families are leaving Egypt. If he's right, we have less than 12 hours to prepare.
So that detests the Russians. It's not the first time he's kicked them out.
The Egyptians need the Russians to operate the same missiles.
Yes, they've taught them which buttons to press, of course.
Anything's possible.
Are the Russians leaving Syria too?
I haven't heard anything.
Show them the photos, Benny.
We overflew the canal last night.
We've never seen a buildup like it. Tanks, artillery, bridging equipment, thousands of men.
I admit the numbers, it's enough to give you a stroke.
Is the eavesdropping system switched on?
Yes.
What have you heard?
Nothing.
We've got their command line stepped. If Sadat had given a signal for war, we would have heard it.
When he breaks wind, I hear it first.
So you've seen the report from London?
Marwan said the same in May.
Without long-range bombers, any Egyptian attack will fail.
Shazi's plan is to cross the canal, dig in under missile umbrella, then bleed us to death. They won't need long-range bombers for that.
They also have a plan to destroy our economy by luring us to the front again and again.
The Egyptians and Syrians have nearly a million men on our borders. We must act.
Come on, they mobilized in similar numbers 22 times this year alone.
Regulars can hold the line for 48 hours, but the reserve will need 3 days to mobilize. If the warning is accurate, then we should have mobilized yesterday.
If.
We've been surprised. We must attack now.
My boys are fueled up and sitting in their cockpits. Just give me the word and I'll smash them.
I would not support the first strike.
They have not even given the signal for war.
What about a partial mobilization?
60,000 troops. Any more will be seen as an act of aggression.
I need 200,000.
60,000 or 200,000? What difference does it make?
Do you want to mobilize on Yom Kippur, the holiest day? The political fallout will bring down the government.
Which is why it is the perfect day to attack.
As the men eye each other doubtfully, the stenographer waits for the next person to speak.
I suggest we mobilize 120,000 troops. Better to be safe than sorry, huh?
120,000 men is not enough.
It is.
It's not.
It is.
It is not. We'll be outnumbered 7-1.
The decision has been made. 120,000. Thank you, gentlemen.
Cigarettes are dropped into a central ashtray. Golda has her own. Benny picks up his black and white photos, and everyone leaves. The chairman of the inquiry poses a question.
Did you trust the Egyptian spy, Marwan?
Well, I was worried that he might be a double agent, of course, but I trusted the judgment of Zamir.
So why didn't you mobilize your reserves on the 5th, on the day that he warned you of war?
Dayan wasn't losing any sleep, and he knew the situation in the north and the south. Should I have gone against him?
You are the Prime Minister, and an extra 24 hours to prepare for war? That might have saved many lives.
Yes, well, That's the question, isn't it?
In a flashback, she steps out of a door onto the rooftop of the building, decked with satellite dishes and solar panels. She walks towards the far end of the roof, where the stenographer, Shia Shapiro, is having a solitary smoke. Golda peers out over the grey cement wall bounding the roof and looks out at the city. She turns towards Shia with an amiable smile.
Morning, dear.
The slender, brown-haired woman in her early 40s gives a nod and hurries off. Golda unwraps a new pack of cigarettes and, looking up, sees a swarm of birds like a black thumbprint in the sky. And she watches it in fascination as it curves, swells, and changes shape. Her eyes follow the trajectory of the hundreds of small black birds piling down into a tall brick chimney. She walks slowly down a barely lit staircase from the roof down to her office where she keeps a stash of pill bottles. She shuts a drawer and looks up to see Lou bringing in a thermos flask on a tray.
I was beginning to panic.
I made soup.
No, I'll have it later.
It's both or neither.
Okay.
She holds out her hand and Lou gives her a fresh pack. She lights up.
Everywhere is shut. I got this from the airport.
Lou pours the soup into two bowls, and Golda comes to sit down next to her. Seated companionably side by side, they spoon up the soup, Golda smoking throughout. They come out of the office into the cabinet room.
Ready?
In my day, they stood for the Prime Minister.
Golda turns to Shia Shapiro.
Where's your son?
Heading to the canal. He's a tank driver with Brent's division.
The Prime Minister lightly strokes the woman's cheek and squeezes her shoulder reassuringly. With her cream bag hanging from her wrist, Golda approaches the long cabinet table. Only Dabo Elazar rises to acknowledge her presence as she sits down near the center of the table, the other members of the cabinet busily engrossed in their own conversations. She picks up a glass ashtray. She turns to her chief of staff.
Dado.
At 10 a.m., we began mobilizing 120,000 troops, including two armored brigades. A few minutes ago, the Syrians began removing the camouflage netting from their guns. In the canal, the Egyptians are cutting channels through their sand barrier in preparation for crossing.
When will the attack start?
Towards sundown. This is our best information. It seems likely that we've been surprised.
So how the hell did this happen, Zaira, huh? We gave you $100 million for your damn eavesdropping system, and you promised us 72 hours notice in case of an attack.
This is not a court of inquiry. And watch your language, please.
Golda surveys the members of her cabinet, and Zaira consults his watch.
4 hours early.
Golda registers Dabo's comment.
The Egyptians are shelling across the canal. Syrian jets are bombing Golan. The Egyptians have fired the Kelt cruise missile at Tel Aviv.
I'm not going to get under the table, but don't let me stop you. You all have a plan. Go back to your ministries and put it into effect with calm precision. Thank you, gentlemen.
As the ministers file out, Golda turns to her defense minister.
We place our trust in you.
The Syrians are the immediate threat. I'll go up to the Northern Command.
Go on the television first. Reassure the people. Then teach our enemies a lesson they'll never forget.
We will crush their bones. We will tear them limb from limb.
Lou comes up to her boss with a protective arm.
Get Kissinger on the phone.
An IDF spokesperson has informed us that Syrian forces are attacking in the north. The Egyptians are advancing in the Sinai Desert in the south and bombing our forces. If Syria conquers the Golan Heights, Israel will be vulnerable to a large-scale invasion.
Lou slips into Golda's office where she's watching the black-and-white news report.
Secretary Kissinger on line one.
Golda stubs out her cigarette and Lou turns down the TV sound and takes a seat. At the Kissinger residence, the Secretary of State turns on his bedside lamp.
Hello?
Mr. Secretary.
Madam Prime Minister.
I'm sorry to wake you, Henry.
Not at all.
We've got trouble with the neighbors again.
I'm sorry to hear that. Could I ask who fired the first shot?
A first strike would have made things much easier for us, but I gave the President my word.
I appreciate that.
We've been surprised, Henry.
And this time, it won't be over in a week.
I'll start to apply diplomatic pressure.
Please do, but be clear on one point.
We will keep fighting until every Egyptian soldier has been driven back across the canal. They will gain nothing by force. If they want their land back, they must recognize the sovereign state of Israel.
I understand.
Thank you, Henry.
Good luck.
They'll help us, won't they?
If they get caught sending us one bullet, the Saudis will cut off their oil.
He wants us to win.
But with a bloody nose. That way, the Egyptians will see him as a friend and they'll abandon the Soviets because containing the Russians, that's all he cares about.
As Diane comes on screen, Lou turns up the volume.
The enemy's tanks have penetrated our lines and occupied several outposts. We have suffered losses in lives and territory. That much...
What the hell is wrong with him?
It is more or less as we expected of the first day of battle. I cannot and will not give exact numbers.
Get me Mizzini.
All I can say...
I need a speech.
...is that this battle will end in victory.
Golda listens in dismay.
God help us all.
Adam escorts her to a TV studio, where she's met by Elie Zeira, head of military intelligence.
We overflew the canal an hour ago. The Egyptians have 10 operational bridges. Two divisions have crossed and are digging in on the east bank.
And the Golan?
Syrian tanks are advancing in the thousands. We are trying our best, but it's very, very serious. Moshe.
Moshe Dayan stands before his prime minister.
How's that?
Fine. Fine. Are you all right?
Yes. Of course.
Go to the Golan. See what's happening. Report back. Go.
Yes.
30 seconds, Madam Prime Minister.
Clutching her handbag and her speech, Golda in her trademark loose clothing with elbow-length sleeves, makes her way up to a table in the curtained studio area and slaps down the single sheet of paper, opens her bag, and takes out her spectacles.
Good evening to our listeners. A press conference will start in a moment in Tel Aviv with Prime Minister Golda Meir. We will be broadcasting live on our channel as the Prime Minister addresses the nation.
An aide offers her a tissue, but she bats her away. She holds up a hand, mumbling the first few words. And the TV lights come on.
4, 3, 2.
The director standing in front of her lets his hand drop.
Today, around 2 p.m., the Egyptian and Syrian armies launched an offensive against Israel. The enemy suffered serious losses. The rulers of Egypt and Syria have long planned a ceasefire violation. In their cowardice, the attackers spread the lie that Israel opened fire first. Our enemies hoped to surprise the citizens of Israel on Yom Kippur. But we were not surprised. For several days, the Israeli intelligence services have known that the Egyptian and Syrian armies were preparing for a combined attack.
A military helicopter flies through darkness near the area of conflict.
We wholeheartedly trust in the spirit and power of the IDF to defeat the enemy.
They are all around us. They are everywhere. The entire valley is infested with Syrian tanks. We are being smashed down here.
Diane is crouching in the helicopter.
I have lost an entire platoon. I have to retreat. Get back in there, Lieutenant. Do not retreat. They can't take the north. Drive forward. We are heading into hell. My whole team is gone. Stay calm and do as you're told. I can't hold the line anymore. I need urgent help. Over. They're destroying our tanks with infantry and shells.
Tanks go up in flames.
I have not seen anything like this. It's an onslaught. Over. Point blank range. Thousands of tanks are in front of us. They're firing at us. They're slaughtering us. Over. We need help.
As Egyptian missiles take out the Israeli tanks, Diane throws up on the floor of the helicopter. The studio lights dim. Golda lights up, almost obscuring herself in a cloud of tobacco smoke. Lou watching her on the TV monitor. Viewed from behind, a thin halo of light framing her hair, Golda puts away her speech and picks up her handbag. She rises to her feet and walks away from the microphone. Moshe Dayan hurries down the long, narrow corridor towards the cabinet office, almost bursting into a run.
We lost the North.
The other ministers look up in shock, and Golda leaves her seat at the table.
It's Armageddon. We lost the North. I alerted Dimona, the nuclear weapon. Yes, that's what I did.
You did what? Are you serious? Get Dardo up here now. Come, Moshe.
This is another Masada, Golda.
Come on.
I saw it with my own eyes. I swear.
She ushers Diane into her office, leaving the others around the table, listening grimly.
We lost around 80, 100 tanks. The whole division is gone. Just gone. In all sincerity and friendship, I offer you my resignation, Golda. I have failed.
I need you on your feet. Do you understand? No more of this. Go home. Wash your face. And snap out of it. Go.
She doesn't look at him as he leaves her office. Her eyes are inwardly focused. She lights up. She comes out of her office and is met by Dardo carrying two rolled up maps.
What's going on?
Have you blown the bridges over the Jordan?
How would the reserves get up to the Golan without the bridges?
He wants to arm the nuclear weapon.
Has he gone mad?
Dayan is finished. Take no orders from him. You are in full command now.
On day two, the Prime Minister takes her seat at the table with Dardo by her side.
We had a terrible night. The Syrians have broken through our lines with many tanks, but for some reason, they have not pressed forward. Maybe they're short of fuel or they don't have orders, I don't know. It's given us a breathing space. I've instructed the Air Force to bring planes from the south. They have orders to attack anything that moves. The situation is difficult. By the 679 are fighting hard. They're tough boys. They won't let their country down. Now, on the Egyptian front...
He unfurls the second map.
We have failed to stop the enemy crossing the canal.
Our tanks arrived too late and in too few numbers. The Egyptians have brought up mobile SAM missile launchers, and the Air Force has been hit very hard.
How many Phantoms have we lost?
Around 30. 50 aircrew dead or missing.
And men?
170 for sure, maybe more. Most pressingly, the strong points are surrounded. Approximately 600 soldiers, most of them reservists, are trapped.
Why weren't they evacuated?
General Agonin told them to fight to the end. The Egyptians are dug in across this line. Gonen is preparing a counterattack. Sharon is head to the south. The plan is to relieve the strong points and drive the Egyptians back across the canal.
You rescue these boys.
She looks up at Dado firmly, and he rolls up his map.
Golda.
You're back. Any more from your friend?
He's in Cairo. The Egyptians have crossed the canal.
Dado is planning a counterattack.
That is what they're expecting. We'll be walking into a trap.
There are 400 kids trapped in the fortresses.
The Egyptians will be waiting. You must stop this attack, Olda.
I do not make the military decisions.
But, Golda, it will be suicidal.
I'm a politician, not a soldier.
Golda, please, I can't...
The door is slammed in Svea's face.
What the hell do you want from me?
She leans over her desk, trying to control her breathing, and goes up on the roof.
Golda! Golda, are you all right? Breathe, Golda, please, breathe. Do you want to drink something?
Lou lights her a cigarette.
The enemy has tasted blood. There is no reason for them to stop now. This is 1948 again. We are fighting for our lives. If the Americans throw us to the dogs and the Arabs reach Tel Aviv, I will not be taken alive.
She turns to Lou with an intense look.
And you are to make sure of that.
The Americans, they won't let us down.
Why not? Because you won't let it happen.
Twitching a smile, Golda puts a grateful arm around her loyal PA.
Sorry, but you're not dead yet.
Alive and kicking.
She descends the unlit spiral staircase from the roof towards the bowels of the building. She walks along a narrow service corridor, dimly lit by strips of neon light beneath clumps of piping above her head, and in the opposite direction to a flapping bird. She wanders into the command center, peering through the glass-walled partitions. Standing at the back of the area, unseen by others, she spots Dado and Avner Shalev scratching their heads at the plotting table as they pore over their tank divisions. She makes her way over to them.
What is this we're hearing?
Our troops in the canal. They're surrounded. These are the fortifications where the boys are trapped. Brad and his tank division will push forward across this plain, smash through the Egyptian line, and relieve the strong points.
He checks his watch.
The counterattack is starting.
Buttons are pressed, dials are turned.
Move out, cross the plain. Move fast. Don't make yourself an easy target. Let's terrify them. Destroy anything that moves. We're moving fast. Why aren't they firing? What was that? Was that a tank? It's not a tank. Where is it? I can see our fortresses on the canal. Has anyone seen it? I think it's our forces. It's not ours, and it's not a tank. I can hear its whistle. What is it? It's not coming from a tank. It's an RPG. Where's it coming from? I can't see a thing. I've been hit. I've been hit. My tank's been hit. It's Saga missiles. It's an ambush. They're covering the whole area. Insert a shell. Always have a shell in the barrel. We're under fire. We're getting smashed.
Golda brings her hand to her face.
Retreat! Retreat! Sagas are being fired non-stop. Retreat! Hundreds of Sagas have been fired. We're at the firing line. Retreat! This is the commander. Fire back at them. What are you waiting for? I can't fire. The shell is stuck. The shell is stuck. This is the commander. No one retreats. Go back to your positions and fire back at them. Is that clear? My whole section is injured. We don't stand a chance. It's vital we secure the line. Don't retreat. This is an order. I repeat, do not retreat. I want reinforcements if it's possible. Over. This is three. The enemy has infiltrated. This is the commander. Hold positions and secure the line immediately. Over. My squad commander is dead. Adar is dead. I'm abandoning. Please send us help. I don't want to die. I want to go home. I want to go.
Golda winces in mute horror.
The Zionists are dead. We are in full control of the area.
In a washroom, she shakes some pills into the palm of her hand and swallows them down. She splashes water on her face. Her whole being is trembling. She returns back along the neon-lit underground corridor of the command bunker. She sits on her bed in her nightgown, a thick plait hanging down her back. She reaches for her lighter and her cigarettes. Slumped on the bed facing her window, she ponders as she exhales. A beam of light from outside momentarily illuminates her face. Her cigarette clasped between her fingers, she pulls her bed cover over herself as she lies down. She lays her head on her pillow and lies still, deep in thought, the cigarette clenched in her fingers. She takes a long puff of nicotine and a funnel of smoke emits from her mouth. It rises in the darkness of the room like smoke from a factory chimney. Viewed from above, the cloud of smoke gets bigger and bigger and slowly envelops her and fills the screen. Smoke is sucked in on itself. Golda wakes in a cold sweat. An antacid tablet and a glass of water fizzes as it dissolves.
It's your anxiety talking, Golda.
Lou is holding Golda by the wrist. Golda squeezes her hand in turn.
Come on, I'll make us some more coffee, all right?
She walks down the narrow corridor towards General Diane, standing outside the cabinet door.
How are you?
Fine.
You coming in? I need you. I'll be there.
She goes inside. He straightens his jacket and follows her in. The others glance round as he comes in. He looks for a place to sit.
Come, Moshe. Sit.
Golda indicates the chair next to her.
I lost another 13 Phantoms and 9 Skyhawks. 11 pilots dead at this rate. 3, maybe 4 more days and I'm out of the fight.
A plane is hit. Golda notes down 11 pilots.
What happened to Sharon and his flanking attack?
He drove around the desert all afternoon with 30 photographers in tow. Didn't fire a shot.
That man. And Bren?
His division is virtually destroyed.
Golda glances at Shir Shapiro.
We still have 400 boys trapped in the fortresses along the canal. We're working on a new rescue plan.
The Egyptians know that.
No one left behind.
It's a trap.
No one left behind, Svika.
What is the point of risking more lives? Let's be honest with ourselves. If we sent a rescue mission, its purpose would be to save our reputation as much as save those boys. So, what are our options?
Sharon wants to cross the canal and cut them off from the rear.
Would that work?
She canvasses answers.
The Egyptians have two divisions on the West Bank lying in wait. He'd be wiped out.
What's the position on the Golan?
We push them back to the ceasefire line. The Syrians are close to collapse.
Can you push them back further, towards Damascus? If we could panic Assad, he will put pressure on Sadat to attack again, exposing his tanks in open country.
Dado, what do you think?
The Egyptians are well dug in. They're not leave their positions. So that got his victory.
Yes. But does he know it? I want you to bomb the outskirts of Damascus, Benny. Get Assad really mad.
I'll need more planes.
Get Kissinger on the phone, please.
She stands up from an ashtray, heaving with stubs.
Cheer up, Moisha. Things could be worse.
How?
You could have my feet.
I understand, but the president is in a difficult position. The winter is coming. If the Saudis were...
The Russians have started a massive airlift. We're seeing planes streaming into Cairo and Damascus. We have lost 500 tanks and one-third of the Air Force.
500?
Yes, and 30 Phantoms. I could have launched a preemptive strike, but I didn't, to save your blushes.
That decision cost us dearly.
Watergate is sweeping through Washington like a firestorm, Golda. Nixon is a lame duck.
But you're not.
Golda.
Would it help if I came to Washington?
You want to fly here during a war?
Yes.
Golda, that would cause problems. The Jewish community here would be alarmed.
No doubt.
If the Arabs defeat us with Soviet weapons, what message does that send to the free world, Henry?
I have some phantoms for you.
She sighs with relief.
Thank you.
Good night, Golda.
Israel simply can't wait for the dust to settle, and the Arabs can't wait for the dust to settle in the Middle East. Both sides are at fault. Both sides need to start negotiating. That is our position. We're not pro-Israel, and we're not pro-Arab, and we're not any more pro-Arab because they have oil and Israel hasn't. We are pro-peace. And it's the interest of the whole area for us to get those negotiations off dead center. And that is why we will use our influence with Israel, and we will use our influence, what influence we have, with the various Arab states and the
Day five, the military leaders assemble in her living room, and Golda brings a cake to the table. She addresses a tall, blunt-haired soldier.
Yes.
General Sharon, it's an honor.
These pictures were taken 3 hours ago by one of my scouts on the canal. We found a gap in the Egyptian line. Here, just north of the Great Bitter Lake. The second Egyptian army is here to the north. The third army here to the south. In the middle, the canal is unprotected. I have motorized rafts big enough to carry tanks. I could have 50 tanks on the West Bank before dawn. I push north, spreading panic.
Ariel Sharon.
Who would like coffee?
Thank you.
Forgive my ignorance. What do these symbols mean?
The 4th and the 21st Egyptian divisions. They're on the west bank of the canal waiting to cross.
I remember. So, Eric, you want to cross the canal with 50 tanks and 2,000 men and take on 2 divisions. I believe that's 600 tanks and 30,000 men. Is that your plan?
We are losing men. Every day we are losing men and machines without improving our position.
Dado, would a crossing succeed?
I doubt it. And it might lead to catastrophe.
For God's sake. Moshe, say something.
Nobody doubts your bravery, Arik. But Dado is right. If you crossed, you'd be destroyed. There would be no one left to stop the Arabs.
No, no, we must attack now.
I have news. The Egyptians will renew the offensive in 2 days' time. The 4th and the 21st Division will cross the canal and join the attack.
If they crossed, Cairo would be undefended. No one could be that stupid.
The Egyptians are about to make a terrible mistake. I suggest we let them make it.
It would seem a ridiculous decision.
No. I don't think so. Sadat is the first Arab leader to defeat the Jews in battle. So he's feeling euphoric. Invincible. Do you think a few sand dunes along the Suez Canal will seem enough when the gates of Jerusalem are beckoning? Knowing when you've lost is easy. It's knowing when you've won that's hard. We'll wait for them to cross. Thank you, gentlemen.
Benny, Elzira, Diane, and Dado get up, leaving blonde-haired, barrel-chested Sharon looking disgruntled.
Eric, you'll get your chance. And for that, they will make you prime minister. Just remember, all political careers end in failure.
Sharon picks up his map and papers, and with a quick glance over his shoulder, helps himself to a slice of cake. On day 7, Lou and Golda are being driven to the hospital. Golda leads the way down the grey-green corridor towards the morgue. She and Lou, with the nurse and Adam behind them, walk past the shelves filling up with bodies wrapped in white sheets. Golda, lying on the medical couch, looks up at the diamond-shaped accelerator. Seeing Lou's anxious face, Golda gives her a reassuring smile. Later, as Golda sits in a bathtub, Lou gently smooths her long, wiry hair, removing the strands that have fallen out. She drops them into the bathwater and goes on smoothing the long hair with both hands. She pushes the hair to one side and starts to sponge Golda's back. Golda watches some of her hair disappearing down the bath plug. In the bedroom, Lou sits down on the bedside and strokes Golda's hand.
It won't be here for long. You take care of yourself.
Lou regards her earnestly, and Golda brings the younger woman's hand to her lips and kisses it.
This is not me talking to you as your boss. You're family to me. You understand me?
The two women enter the Prime Minister's office on day 8. Passing a TV in the typing pool, reporting the latest news.
According to the Geneva agreements, both sides have to provide information about their prisoners of war. The propaganda from the Arab countries reveals very little about the number of prisoners and missing persons.
Sherson is missing.
The two women exchange an anxious look.
I'll speak to him.
No, not now. The meeting is starting. Go, I'll talk to
her. Thank you.
Lou walks into the typing pool and comes to stand next to Kershon's mother, Shia, who's watching the Israeli prisoners filing past the TV camera. She lays her head on Lou's shoulder and starts to sob. Lou wraps her arms around her. In the cabinet room, Elizera presents his report.
We overflowed the canal at dawn. As you can see, the Egyptian tanks are on the bridges. The Egyptians are crossing. Cairo is undefended. We are hearing it all on the listening system.
Golda peers over her glasses.
They will attack tomorrow.
All eyes are on Golda, who turns to former chief of staff, Chaim Bar-Lev.
Chaim, are you ready?
We will be.
When they attack, smash them. Good luck.
She shakes Chaim's hand.
Marwan was right. Well done, Zvika.
Zvika, the head of Mossad, acknowledges Dado's praise.
The American convoy is here.
They all come out on the roof and peer up at the night sky. Inside, a bank of monitors shows the progress of the fighting.
The Egyptians are falling right into our trap. They're crossing the plain in front of the canal.
Our tanks are dug in on this little ridge, on the top of this little ridge. From below, you can only see the turret and the gun. Very hard to hit. Very hard. I've reinforced Brand Division with tanks from the Jordan border. They're old and slow, but their guns are very accurate.
Golda approaches a huge wall screen, and she, Dado, and Benny watch the fighting as it happens.
This is the commander. I see exhaust fumes. Egyptians are on the move. They're crossing the Sinai. Hold on. Don't open fire until they're in a 1,000-meter range. Wait until then. Let them get closer. All clear? This is one. They are 2,000 meters away. Over. Commander, this is two. I've identified movement towards me. They are exposed. We can knock them out easily. This is the commander. Open fire when I command. Wait for them to be in a 1,000-meter range, then open fire. Good luck. We're counting on you.
Golda's eyes are fixed on the screen.
This is two. They are 1,500 meters away and approaching quickly. This is three. 1,200 meters. Over. Station one, prepare to open fire. Three, two, one, fire. Don't allow them to lift their heads. Come on, get them. Fire without fear. Commander, this is two. We've destroyed five tanks. This is the commander. Keep going. Don't stop. Direct fire. Don't let them get to the line. Steady fire. Don't waste a shot. Keep firing. This is the commander. We're taking them all out. I repeat, all of them. Don't leave even one tank. They are fleeing. I see some on foot. They've had enough. They're retreating. This is the commander. Don't stop. Don't stop. Don't let them run away. Fire everywhere. The whole area. Commander, I'm chasing them to the canal. Stay put. Don't move forward. I repeat, don't move forward.
Golda slowly raises her head, her eyes glittering. Dado nods to Benny, who pats him on the back. Day 10.
Well, they've had enough.
Well done, everybody. We've destroyed them.
They'll not attack again, but crossing the canal will not be easy. The crossing is only possible here, in the area called the Chinese Farm. and it's only 2 kilometers wide.
When the Arabs realize what's going on, the jaws will snap shut like a crocodile, and we'll be the ones cut off. We're in the best position we've been in since the fighting began. I think we should think seriously about accepting a ceasefire.
Diane demonstrates with cigarette packs and lighters.
We are facing an unholy alliance between the Soviets and the Arabs that must be defeated. If our enemies stop fearing us, they will attack again and again and again. This war cannot end with Sadat on the East Bank.
Diane lights up. Behind them, Anwar Sadat is making a TV address. Golda touches one of the lighters on the map.
Can Sharon get his tanks across the canal? Moshe, what does your gut tell you?
To cross.
He shoves one lighter into the back of the other, pushing it across the canal. Golda, hurrying down the staircase with Lou, trips.
I'm all right.
They walk along the dimly lit basement of the command center. They proceed along a short corridor lined with dispatch folders towards the nerve center.
Prime Minister, the crossing has started.
They're led into a glass-walled cubicle, and Golda is handed headphones.
All units, listen up. We're going in. Move out. And let's button up until we know what's on the other side. Station 2, this is the commander. We're heading in towards the canal.
Dotto, what is happening?
Sharon is now crossing the canal with rubber boats. There's a fight to keep the bridgehead open. Chinese farm.
Two here, close the route. Two, start crossing to the other side. Over. Acapulco, we did it! We've crossed the canal. We're in Africa.
We're in Africa, Golda. We're in Egypt.
Bravo, guys. Well done.
As buttons are pressed, Dado's dark eyes fill with alarm.
Engaging.
Heavy fire! It's an ambush!
They're being engaged.
We are surrounded. Large arms are hitting the whole brigade. It's a trap.
They're hitting us. They're hitting us with large arms.
We're being hit by massive fire.
We're getting reports of a counterattack on our forces.
They're behind us. The Egyptians are attacking.
Casualties. A lot of casualties.
Gunner, put the shell in there and smash them. Now! I can't. It's stuck. I can't.
Sorry. We're ambushed. Doesn't sound good.
Golda sinks down in a chair.
David, put the shell in and fire now.
She removes the headset. Squeezing her hands, she draws blood.
I am trying. He's dead. 184, what's going on? We're being killed here. I just lost my commander. This is two. Wait patiently. Wait in the bunkers. They're firing at us, killing us. This is one. Stay calm. We will get you support. We need support now. We are surrounded by Egyptians. Reload the gun quickly. Come on now. I can't. It's stuck. It won't go in. They're coming. Reload it now. I can't. I'm trying. I'm trying.
The night sky reverberates with the shelling. Standing by the parapet of the roof, having a smoke, Golda is joined by Chief of Staff Dado Elazar.
What's the news?
There's heavy fighting around Chinese farm, but the bridgehead is secure. Sharon has 30 tanks on the west bank.
We're building a pontoon bridge. Brand's division should cross soon.
Well done. And the casualties?
He lights a cigarette.
Dead. And more to come.
Bringing her notebook from her handbag, Golda writes in pencil. The light fixture on Golda's ceiling resembles an all-seeing eye. She wakes with a start and looks up at the ceiling.
Hello? Hello?
Golda is curled up on the floor, willing the shouting to stop. She's sitting on the side of her bed with a bottle of pills in her hand. At the inquiry, she looks wanly at the panel of men facing her.
Do you know how many people died because of that crossing?
On the 14th?
She brings out her notebook.
700 dead or missing. Approximately 2,000 wounded, and some 300 prisoners. I counted them all, Mr. Chairman. Every one of them. Trust me.
The action returns to the cabinet room.
Dotto, where are we?
Ren wants to cut Suez from the Cairo Road, somewhere near here, kilometer 101.
You mean the entire Third Army would be cut off?
Yes. There's no water in the East Bank. They won't last long.
A view of the Third Army's position on the map.
We'd have to duck by the throat. You have to negotiate. How many men in the Third Army?
About 30,000.
You'd have me create an army of widows and orphans.
Are you prepared to do that?
The world must believe that I am.
Prime Minister.
Sher Shapiro comes in with a note. Golda puts on her glasses. The telegram is in Hebrew.
Henry Kissinger's presidential jet landed at Lod International Airport in Tel Aviv late this afternoon. Kissinger was greeted at the airport by a small delegation of officials before getting into a waiting car and was driven to meet with Israeli Prime Minister Golda Meir. The meeting took place at Meir's house in Tel Aviv, and they are sure to discuss a ceasefire agreement between Israel and its Arab neighbors.
Kissinger arrives at Golda's house after dark. She crosses her living room to receive her visitor, who comes in with Zvir Zamir. Dado Elazar, Moshe Dayan, and Eli Zeira are already there.
Welcome to Israel, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you, Madam Prime Minister.
So this is General Elazar, our Chief of Staff.
General
Zeira, Head of Military Intelligence.
Pleased to meet you.
Zvi Zamir, Head of Mossad. And, of course, Moshe Dayan, Minister of Defense.
They all stand around in a circle, smiling awkwardly. Golda signals to Dado with a raise of her eyebrows.
Oh.
The penny drops, and he leads his colleagues out of the room, leaving the Prime Minister with the Secretary of State.
Thank Thank you for coming, Henry.
Of course.
Are you hungry?
No, thank you.
My housekeeper, Leah, made some borscht.
No, no, please. The Russians gave me two huge dinners last night, one after the other. To be honest, I'm feeling a bit uncomfortable.
Ah, those Russians is all about strategy. Come sit.
You know, they jammed the communication equipment on my plane.
Of course. Those Russians, they brought nothing but misery to the world.
Normally, I would agree with you. Of course, there is Tolstoy.
And Dostoevsky. Misery on every page.
No, please, thank you.
You have to eat it, Henry. She's a survivor.
She serves him beetroot soup.
Enjoy.
He places his napkin on his lap and picks up a spoon. Leia, standing behind Golda, is waiting to see him eat. He obediently tastes some of the dark red soup.
It's very good, thank you.
Golda watches with an encouraging smile as he takes another spoonful. Golda turns to her housekeeper.
Thank you, Leia.
As he puts down his crumpled napkin, Golda moves the soup tureen to one side.
Madam Prime Minister, in terms of our work together, I think it's important that you remember that I am first an American, second I am Secretary of State, and third I am a Jew.
You forget that in Israel we read from right to left.
Of course. Are you okay?
Sorry.
You look tired. Been a tough time for you.
We came this close to defeat Henry.
President Nixon sends his regards. When he drinks, he talks about you.
My name must be on his lips all the time.
Golda, OPEC has declared the United States a principal hostile nation. The Saudis have cut off our oil. Crude has jumped from $4 a barrel to 12, so you can see that the American people will pay a high price for supporting Israel. Which is why we need the ceasefire agreement.
He places a document folder in front of her, and she lays a bigger folder on top of it.
First things first. Here is a list of every prisoner of war. We have taken some 9,000 men. Not that Assad or Sadat care less about their men. I want a list of every prisoner of war, a date for their return, and the return of the bodies.
Brezhnev assures me you will talk to Sadat.
I need a guarantee, Henry, and one from Assad. He's the worst. Fingernails torn out. Our boys come home in pieces. This country is traumatized. My generals are begging me to occupy Cairo. Sharon is like a dog on the leash.
If you do that, you'll be on your own. Israel's long-term interests will not be served by a fracturing of our relationship, Golda. Sadat has already agreed to the terms of the ceasefire.
Oh, of course he has. He's on the brink of defeat. It will give him a chance to regroup. You are the only person in the world who could possibly understand what I'm going through.
Yes, I know how you feel, but we need a ceasefire.
I thought we were friends, Henry.
We will always protect Israel.
Like you did in 48? We had to get our weapons from Stalin. Stalin! Our survival is not in your gift. If we have to, we will fight alone.
I'm stopping in London for a few hours on the way home. I should arrive in Washington around 9 a.m. in the morning tomorrow, your time, at which time I will have to announce the ceasefire. That will give you 18 hours to secure your supply lines. But I warn you, Golda, Any attempt to encircle the Third Army will bring the Soviets into the conflict, you understand?
I understand.
On that basis, does Israel agree to the ceasefire?
I have 18 hours. Then, yes.
Thank you for the borscht.
Seen through the door of the living room, they both rise to their feet. Day 18. Kissinger turns in the doorway.
Good luck, Golda.
She watches him walk across the living room, and pulling aside the curtain on the window, she follows his progress outside as he returns to his waiting car. The car drives off, followed by a security vehicle. She lets go of the curtain, turns from the window, and puffs on her cigarette. Shrouded again in a headscarf, she pays another visit to the hospital with Lou and her protection officer. Walking along the length of the morgue, she notes in dismay that every tray is occupied by a body wrapped in a white sheet with a name label attached to its left foot. Lying on her back on the medical couch, she looks up at the machine, sending its rays down onto her chest. Later, she's at home in bed.
Golda, they want to see your face.
I'll have to do it without my face.
No, this is not possible. Come on.
No.
Golda, I'm sorry, but I have to get you out of this bed. One, two, three.
Lou tries to pull her up.
I can't. No. No, it hurts.
I know it hurts.
It hurts.
I know. I'll help you. I promise I would put you in this helicopter. Come on.
She manages to lift her.
No.
All right. You give them hope. They need to see your face.
Having got her dressed, she gives Golda an injection in her belly.
Prime Minister Golda Meir visited the soldiers at the front this morning while wearing her famous shoes that are nowadays known as Golda shoes. She immediately opens the newspaper, reading every page. This is our Prime Minister's first visit to Egypt. She stands up and looks out with some excitement. We are completely confident in holding the vast desert land we've conquered. This land creates a complete separation between us and the Third Army soldiers who crossed the canal and moved towards us. Her face shows sadness. She seems to be aware of the heavy cost in human life caused by crossing the canal.
Gold appears closer to the window of the helicopter. And Adam looks towards the cockpit at the two pilots at the controls.
Her first time on the Egyptian side. She is greeted by many soldiers. All the best to you. Hey. Hey, wait, guys. The soldiers on the surrounding dunes are waiting patiently for a group photo. Mrs. Meir is also waiting patiently until the last photographer can capture this special moment. The soldiers who surround her leave her no choice. As you move, softly. We'd already encircled the Third Army at that point, and we could have wiped them out and destroyed them. It's really crushing. The IDF was leading until we were ordered to stop.
We are by our logic, and it seems to me that logic, if one can say that logic makes sense, dictates that we stand like this, and they stand here, and we stand there, and they stand there, and we stand here, and everything is confused.
A local man hands her a bottle.
Oh. Thank you. Fine. No, so let's say then that there is still no peace, but until then...
The man is handed a cup, and he brings it to the Prime Minister, rinses it out, and pours her a cup of black coffee.
This is luxury. What a treat. This is nepotism. Cheers to you all.
At the end of a tiring day,
Golda bids farewell to the soldiers and boards a helicopter back to Tel Aviv to take care of the country's affairs.
Day 19.
I've just got the news that Bren has cut the Suez to Cairo Road. The Egyptian Third Army is completely surrounded.
Secretary Kissinger is on the line.
You've got Saddam by the throat, Golda.
Golda picks up the red telephone.
Mr. Secretary?
You are to open a humanitarian corridor to the Third Army, Golda.
We cannot allow 30,000 men to die of thirst.
We'll send them water when we've got our prisoners back.
I will try to arrange.
And Sadat agrees to direct talks with Israel. Not the Zionist entity. Israel.
That would be tantamount to recognition.
Yes.
He will never agree to that.
The Arab world will turn against him.
If he doesn't, I will order my planes to attack. All those men will die. All of them.
The destruction of the Third Army would
force Sadat from power. He'd be hanged in Tahrir Square.
Well, that thought should focus his mind.
And he would be replaced by a Soviet hardliner. You know this as well as I do.
You mean a madman bent on the destruction of Israel?
The Russians are on high alert. They are preparing 11 airborne divisions, do you understand?
Do you think I don't know that? Let me tell you
about the Russians, Henry. When I was a child in Ukraine, at Christmas time, my father would
board up the windows of our house.
Golda.
To protect us from Cossacks who would get drunk and attack Jews. They would beat Jews to death in the street for fun. My father would hide us in the cellar. And we'd stay silent, hoping the killers would pass us by. My father's face, Henry. I will never forget that look. All he wanted was to protect his children.
I am not that little girl hiding in the cellar.
So now you're going to fight with the Russians too, huh?
You must choose, Henry.
Side with me, or I will create an army of orphans and widows.
This is not the way to...
I will slaughter them all. Whose side are you on? You must choose.
Golda.
Please think about it. Goodbye, Mr. Secretary.
Kissinger sits by his unlit fireplace, the receiver resting on his leg, reflecting on her threat. Golda springs up from her chair, staggers into her bathroom, and spits out blood. Lou quickly hands her a glass of water. She rinses her face with tap water. Lou shakes some pills into Golda's hand, and she swallows them down with more water. She rinses her face again. She dries off her cheeks with a towel. As Lou reaches for the glass of water, Golda seizes her hand, and they both sit for a moment, until Golda recovers herself and drinks down the water. An almost empty cup of black coffee next to a pack of cigarettes and four pills in a row, a telephone dial with the ident number 107, a revolving ceiling fan, and overflowing ashtray. Day 20.
Mr. Secretary?
Sadat wants you to send your chief of staff to a junction on the Suez-Cairo Road. Kilometer 101, do you know it?
We took it a few days ago. When?
At dawn.
And the Russians?
They're watching. Good luck, Golda.
Thank you, Henry.
She replaces the red receiver. A TV report.
The meeting is over. Dado is leaving the tent, followed by the Egyptian commander, General Gamassi. They are both rushing to report to their leaders about the events of this important day.
Golda pacing looks at her watch. Diane and the others sit waiting. Golda places the receiver on the table and turns on the speaker.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Dado, speak up.
I have a message from Sadat. He's offering direct talks and an exchange of POWs. He's given the Red Cross a list of names. He referred to you as the Prime Minister of Israel, Golda.
He used that word, Israel.
Yes, Israel. He's recognizing Israel.
Tell General Gamassi that we welcome President Sadat's kind words.
She squeezes Diane's hand. She and her ministers clink glasses. Holding an unlit cigarette, she looks around for a lighter, which Moshe Dayan provides.
Well done, Golda.
Thank you.
She spots Vika, the head of Mossad, perched against her desk in her office, not joining in the celebration.
Excuse me.
She makes her way across the cabinet room past members of the female staff. Svika watches her approach with a preoccupied expression. She eyes him beadily and comes to stand right in front of him, pointing a finger at him.
I know that look.
It wasn't switched on, the bugging system. That's why military intelligence didn't hear the signal for war.
This cannot be true.
Zahira switched it on for a few hours on Thursday the 4th, but that was a technical test. None of the lines were monitored. It was then switched off again until Saturday the 6th. The morning war broke out.
No.
Zahira intercepted a cable from the Iraqis to the Russians, telling them that war was about to begin. But he kept it to himself.
Why?
As Zahira and see them talking.
Who likes to be wrong?
The listening system must be kept secret. No one must know about this.
You will take the blame. I will defend your memory. I promise you that.
She nods faintly, and he leaves the room. Day 21. She's sleeping on her couch next to the TV, which is showing a musical program. Lou comes in and locks the door. She places a list of names onto the coffee table and sits down. She reaches over and lightly touches Golda's hand. Golda sits up groggily and looks at the list in front of her. Lou shows her a name at the bottom of one of the pages.
Golda, look at that.
Golda picks up the list of names and, peering at it closely, looks across at Lou in dismay. Together they go to the typing pool. Golda hesitates at the door of the room where Shir Shapiro is typing. Lou takes the list of names from her boss and starts walking towards Shir's desk. She places the list on the desk. Golda watches her face crumble. Lou puts a hand on her shoulder, which she shakes off in anger. She looks up and sees Golda in the doorway, her eyes also filled with tears. Golda turns away. She leaves the typing pool with a heavy tread and retreats into her room. She walks to the window, covered by a thin curtain lit from outside, her shoulders heaving. Her whole body shakes as she weeps. At Lod Airport at night, in the beam of a powerful white floodlight, pallbearers solemnly carry coffins draped in the white Israeli flag, trimmed with blue and the Star of David in its center, from a cargo plane, and lower them onto the tarmac, next to other coffins laid in rows. Viewed from behind, Golda is watching the somber spectacle from a distance. Lou hurries up to her, the night breeze fluttering her headscarf.
Come on, Golda. You can't stay here all night. It's cold, come on.
Golda lets herself be led to her car, where Adam Sneer is quietly waiting by the open car door. She climbs in and he shuts the door. In the back seat, Golda brings out her notebook and writes down the numbers of dead. In her office, she sits at her desk, deep in rueful thought, her forehead etched with crisscross lines, her eyes staring into the middle distance. The chairman of the panel addresses her.
Thank you, Madam Prime Minister. That will be all.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
She rises to her feet and stubs out her cigarette. She picks up her handbag and pauses before turning back to face the panel.
My gut told me that war was coming, but I ignored it. I should have mobilized that night. All those boys who died, I will carry the pain of that to my grave. Please, don't write that down.
The court typist lifts her fingers from the keys as Golda crosses to the door, leaving smoke curling from her cigarette butt, and the committee members sitting rigidly in their seats. December the 8th, 1978, Golda is in hospital with the TV on.
Good evening, everyone. This is Laura Stein in Washington. Exactly 1 year ago today marks the first time former Prime Minister Golda Meir met Egyptian President Anwar Sadat face to face. Let's look back at this monumental moment that shaped the peace treaty between Israel and Egypt that will be signed later today.
When asked many years ago, when do I think peace will come, I said, the date I do not know. But I know under what conditions it will come. There will be a great leader. He will wake up one morning and feel sorry for his own people for his own sons that have fallen in battle, that day will be the beginning of peace between us and them. Mr. President, your call for peace, and I believe in your sincere desire for peace, as I hope that you believe in the sincere desire on our part for peace, then let us go on. Let us at least conclude one thing. The beginning that you have made with such courage and with such hope for peace, let us decide one thing. It must go on, face to face, between us and between you, so that even an old lady like I am, we'll live to see the day.
I've always said this.
You always call me an old lady, Mr. President.
Golda Meir with Anwar Sadat on TV.
We will live to see the day. Whoever signs on the part of Israel, I want to live to see that day. And Mr. President, as a grandmother to a grandfather, May I give you a little present for the new granddaughter. Thank you for your present that you have given me.
Golda's arm hangs limply from the hospital bed. Her oxygen mask lies on the floor.
And who by a fire? Who by a water? Who in the sunshine? Who in the nighttime? Who by high ordeal?
On the smooth, polished, turquoise hospital floor, dead birds lie strewn in the corridor outside her room.
And who shall I say is calling? And who in her lonely slip, who by barbiturate, who in these realms of love, by something blood, who by avalanche, who by powder, who for his greed, who for his hunger.
The Agronaut Commission of Inquiry in 1974 cleared Golda of any wrongdoing for her part in the Yom Kippur War. Beneath the photo of Sadat, Carter and Rabin, she lived to see the signing of the Camp David Accords between Israel and Egypt on September the 17th, 1978, which paved the way to peace.
Let us have no war after October.
No more war, no more bloodshed.
The first treaty between Israel and any of its Arab neighbors, Sadat and Rabin heartily shake hands. Pallbearers carry a coffin draped in the Israeli flag. A hero outside of Israel and controversial in her own land, her legacy of saving her country from annihilation, leading to peace, serves as her memorial. Golda Meir, 1898 to 1978. Dedicated to all the men and women who fought and died in the Yom Kippur War. The audio description was written and recorded by Veronica Hicks. Directed by Guy Nateef. Written by Nicholas Martin. Produced by Michael Kuhn, Nicholas Martin. Produced by Jane Hooks, Associate Producers Gavin Glendinning, Libby Darcy, Executive Producers Andrew Carpen, Shivani Rawat, Kent Sanderson, Julie Goldstein, Executive Producers Louise Nathanson, Anna Vincent, Hilton Nathanson, Executive Producers Tim Haslam, Hugo Grumbar, Christopher Figg, Robert Whitehouse, Ian Hutchinson, Saskia Thomas, Executive Producer Malcolm Ritchie, Executive Producer Celine Rattray, Jenny Halper, Jamie Diner, Executive Producer Mark Sharandoff, Executive Producers Norman Merry, Peter Hamden. Executive Producers Paul Singer, Gordon Singer. The Paul E. Singer Foundation. Co-producers Derek Tan, Sayoko Teitelbaum. Director of Photography, Jasper Wolf, NSC. Editor, Ari Klahav-Lubovich. Projection Designer, Arad Sawat. Costume Designer, Sinead Kidao. Hair, Makeup and Prosthetics Designer, Karen Hartley-Thomas. Music by Dasha Dauenhauer. Music Supervisor, Dushyan Piruti Viraja. Supervising Sound Designer and Recording Mixer, Neve Adiri. Post-Production Supervisor, Jackie Vance. Casting Director Alex Johnson, CSA, CDG. Casting Director Israel Arid Azule. Helen Mirren, Golda. A Piccadilly Pictures in association with Big Entrance Presentation. In association with Embankment Films, in association with Lipsync. A QWERTY Films and Big Fat Stories production, with High and Low Films, in association with New Native Pictures. Cast in order of appearance, Golda Meir, Helen Mirren, Adam Sneer, Zed Joseph, Golda Double, Claudette Williams, Chairman Agranat, Henry Goodman, Young Pianist, Olivia Brody, Miss Epstein, Emma Davis, Svea Zamir, Rote Kainan, Luke Hadar, Camille Cotin, Dr. Rosenfeld, Jonathan Taffler, Shia Shapiro, Eli Piercy, Moshe Dayan, Rami Heuberger, Elzeira, Dvir Benedek, David Dado Elazar, Leo Ashkenazi, Benny Pellet, Ed Stoppard, Chaim Barlev, Dominic Muffin, Minister Uri, Mark Fleischman, Avner Shalev, Daniel Benzanu, Henry Kissinger's secretary, Jaime Ray Newman, Henry Kissinger, Liev Schreiber, Ariel Sharon, Ohad Noller, Yael female soldier, Sarah Martin. Composed, recorded, and produced by Dasha Dauenhauer. Violin, Ben Schneider. Violoncello, Felicitas Conrad. Vocals, Heidi Heidelberg. Percussion and cowbell, Thomas Sporer. Flute and clarinet, Tilman Denhardt. Piano, Dasha Dauenhauer. Viola da gamba, Justin Robinson. Trumpet, Lukas Lindner. E-guitar, Alex Komlu. Orchestra, inspired Symphony Orchestra Budapest. Conductor, Lorenz Dungel. Recorded at Studio Dauenhauer. Who by Fire, words and music by Leonard Cohen. Dido and Aeneas, Act 3, When I Am Laid in Earth, Dido's Lament, by Leopold Stokowski. Acknowledgements, map collection of Eran Laor, the National Library of Israel, the Prime Minister's Office, Israel State Archives, the National Photographic Collection, Government Press Office, the Yom Kippur War Center, the National Literary Newspaper Collection, newspapers Haaretz, Yediot, Aronot, and Ha'olam Hazeh. The filmmakers would like to thank the 421st Armored Brigade, IDF. Ada Media Limited has not received any compensation or other consideration or entered into any agreement relating to the appearance of any tobacco products in this picture. The events portrayed in the film are based on true events. Some aspects of this portrayal have been fictionalized for dramatic purposes. The characters portrayed have also been fictionalized for dramatic purposes, and any resemblance between them and any actual living individuals should not be inferred. Filmed in the UK and Israel. Copyright Adam Media Limited, 2022. All rights reserved.